Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Sort of overcast, been a cloudy day, but it's been pretty pleasant outside. So hope everybody doing well on this Thursday. It's Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the control. So the normal, I don't know if we're normal. It's the regular crew.
I don't know if we're regular.
Yeah, I don't know about that. We're irregular and abnormal, but... But our Thursday third will be joining us in hour number two, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer.
That's right. It's a busy busy year for Justin. A lot of things a lot of things changing around his around his life, including you know, some big stuff happening this summer. And he's also in the middle of a move right now. So he's going to call us. I guess today is a big day for some furniture stuff and some boxes and, you know, what have you, all the fun associated with moving, even though it's just a move across town. But he's going to
it's still no fun anytime you have to pack everything up and move.
At least the weather cooperated.
Yeah. You know,
that's something I have had to try to move. You know, I've put it off until the last Saturday or the last Sunday we could, and it happened to be a day where it absolutely poured. Right, and that's it stinks, but what are you going to do about it except get some plastic bags out and some garbage bags and cover your stuff.
Yeah, I hope you've got a spare tarp or something like that.
Cover it as best you can and hope that the furniture can survive a move across. But that's so we're going to talk with Justin Ferguson.
Well, your last move was what, about 200 yards?
No, that was nice. that was a nice being able to.
You did move across the street though.
Being able to see the new place from the old place makes a move a little bit easier, but so we're going to talk with Justin Ferguson about a lot of stuff going on in the world of Auburn athletics, including the bombshell yesterday, the huge reveal as Jahni Broome, you know, news as big as the player itself, Bill. Jahni Broome making the announcement yesterday on social media, right at the beginning
right
of hour
the
number two.
Right at the start of hour number two. Yeah, appreciate him doing that for
just,
us.
Just right after 5 o'clock, Jahni Broome making it official that he will be back for his final year of college basketball. And what that sets up is an Auburn team that goes into next year with, the 2018-2019 team. Defending SEC regular season champions that brought back Jared and Bryce and Chuma and Anthony McLemore from that team. That team entered, I believe, at 11 in the AP poll.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could see this team coming into the season, even though they didn't win the SEC last year, I could see this team coming into the season with more preseason hype because you just don't see veteran teams like this, especially that won as many games as Auburn did last year, bringing back so much of the foundation while also adding a point guard like JP Pegues. I mean, there are reasons why this thing's going to be there's going to be a lot of hype leading up to the upcoming Auburn men's basketball season, and the fact that Jahni Broome is coming back what's around Jahni Broome, I think, played a big role in his decision to come back.
Sure, Dylan Cardwell being back, Chad Baker Mazzara, Chaney Johnson.
Or at least...
You've got Chris Moore. I mean, the entire front court, with the exception of Jalen Williams, who was out of eligibility, is back. And Auburn now, I mean, we'll check and see what Ferg's heard about this, but I'm hearing some rumblings that Auburn very well could be getting a visit soon from R.J. Godfrey, the Clemson power forward who's entered the portal, the son of Randall Godfrey, the outstanding former football player.
It looks like P.J. Hall is going to come back to college basketball and play another year at Clemson. A lot of folks ended the season, a little bit like Jani Broome, a lot of folks ended the season and the tournament thinking, oh yeah, P.J. Hall's going to, you know, he's going to go begin a pro career, even if he's not a locked-in top 10, top 20 pick. There, you know, there's going to be a job for him in the NBA next year. People were sort of writing off the thought that he would continue. He is one of the players like Mark Sears, who is in the early entry but retaining college eligibility category, and it's a huge that's huge for Clemson to get him back. And it also
they really were hoping though that that RJ'd be back as well.
But I think that the thought that maybe with PJ Hall's PJ Hall returning, it might influence what else happens on that Clemson depth chart, and maybe somebody who thought they were going to step in to those PJ Hall minutes is going to go explore the transfer portal instead, which it seems like is the case now. And with Jani, like if Jani had decided to open the bidding, right? Like we're hearing reports. We talked about it with Caldwell yesterday. Like the reports of what an all conference caliber post or what a first team post can get you in the portal, even for just 1 year. I mean, Jani Broome, the market. I mean, it's all speculation. But if Jani Broome had said, I'm gonna play one more year of college basketball, and I'm gonna go to the highest bidder, right? I'm gonna go to the team that makes the biggest financial offer. I think people would speculate numbers like 1.5 to 2.5.
Yeah, definitely a seven figure number.
Yeah, like I think that's the kind of number. And for him to with that option in front of him, for him to choose Auburn, one, it makes you wonder what kind of financial offer he received to come back to Auburn. But also, there's a lot of other things going on there. I mean, it's a reminder. He would have been taken care of financially anyway. I wonder if this is a guy choosing comfort. This is a guy choosing fun, and this is a guy choosing things that college athletes and professional athletes aren't often asked to prioritize or aren't expected to prioritize. Like, he's choosing things like loyalty and his
offer. Yeah, but he's not doing it for free.
But no, he's not doing it for
free. He probably could have found a sweeter deal.
I mean,
money wise,
Arkansas and Kentucky aren't paying anybody right now, right? There's nobody on, I mean, with the exception of Big Z, there's nobody on either of those rosters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I imagine they might have been interested.
They have some openings.
Eric Musselman has openings in Los Angeles and has gone into the transfer portal before. Kansas and Duke and UConn are replacing their posts from this past season and would probably be interested in the service. So I'm saying, so for Auburn to not just to get Jani back for another year of college basketball, but get him back at Auburn is it's huge, and it will set off expectations that are just they're even for Bruce Pearl's Auburn basketball team. Like I feel like it might take this upcoming season might be taken to a new level.
Yeah, I mean it's a huge compliment to Auburn, and it's a huge get or return, whatever there. Now I mentioned RJ Godfrey as a possibility. I mean, if Auburn were able to get him, to add him to the roster, then you're maybe one more spot that you get just looking for a few minutes at the point and maybe some minutes elsewhere, maybe a combo guard or a primary point guard, young guy looking to get a few minutes from this roster being set. And I mean set for another outstanding season and expected run.
Oh, I think so. I mean, and Auburn's not done. I mean, we believe, I would think there's a guard and a forward, right, that are still, and you don't have enough playing time to sell. Like, I think guys who are in really high demand among the top schools in college basketball, but you do have minutes.
You've got more minutes, I think, in the front court than you do in the back court.
You do. You have minutes. I mean, you have I think the easiest way to explain it is Jalen Williams is gone. Chaney Johnson, I would think, steps into Jalen's role
right
from this past year, and that leaves an opening for Chaney's
minutes, which were, you know, upper teens to around 20 minutes a game.
I want to say in conference play, Chaney got pretty close to, I think it was over 15.
Yes.
I think it was in the
ballpark
of 17, 20.
18.
Yeah, ballpark of 20. So
I mean, that's something that could be appealing, especially on a team that has a chance to to be pretty highly touted.
And I think they do want to keep their flexibility open for 2025, which would mean, or beyond 2025, which
you don't want everybody leaving after this year. I don't think that Bruce would like to have to replace like 8 or 9 spots after this year.
Yeah, I mean maybe if they can find
a guy. You
already
got 7 guys that we talked about in their final year
If they find someone at this stage with multiple years of eligibility left that wants to play largely a reserve role this upcoming season.
Well, I wonder, and we have not heard Bruce say this, and we'll talk to Justin about this in the second hour, is Bruce going to pitch? We're going to do it again. We're going to run back what we did last year where there's going to be two different units that are going to be playing about equal time. That's a better pitch to a player looking to come in than we want you as a reserve.
Right, I mean, and it's still, I feel like we're looking at the same, 18 to 20 minutes, right? The same way. We're looking at it the same way. It's just,
but a lot of times when people hear reserve, they're thinking maybe 10 minutes.
Well, I guess, and that's the
because
question.
Most places don't play reserves double figure
although,
minutes.
Although, how many minutes are you expecting from Chaney Johnson this upcoming season?
Well, I mean, it depends on what Bruce wants to do.
Yeah, I know, but that's, but
I mean, if he wasn't playing Janai 25 minutes this past year.
Right.
Would you expect Chaney to play 28
to 32? Well, the easiest guideline would be Jalen's minutes, right? You look at what Jalen did this past year and you say, well, if Chaney's stepping into Jalen's role, then just, look at however many, was it 28 or so? I want to say it was 26 to 28 minutes per game for Jalen before the injury.
I think it was under 28.
Right. So that would, I mean, and I would think that whoever you're looking at right now to add it forward would fit in. And I guess there's also the question of already.
It took till Jalen's fifth or sixth year to get that many minutes.
The other question is Janai going to play minutes at the four? Because then if Janai plays minutes at the four, then we're probably talking about fewer minutes for Chaney and whoever we're looking at here. But no, so let me ask you, Bill. So you think it would, because I'm
thinking if you're pursuing an RJ Godfrey, you're pitching him. He could play 15 to 20 minutes.
Well, we've talked about like the Javon McCormick style pitch, right? The idea of, hey, you come in.
That's what I'm pitching a guard.
Yeah, you come in, you have it, and then I guess Chaney Johnson would be the pitch for a front court, especially somebody who hasn't played D1 basketball before. If you're looking at or somebody who hasn't been to the SEC before, you say we'll use you the way we used Chaney this past year. You're going to be the backup four, but you're going to play.
Chaney played 15.3 minutes a game. Janai led Auburn in average minutes per game, 24.8. That was the leading. Jalen played 24.1.
I wonder where Jalen was before the injury. I wonder if that, because I feel like maybe they were more cautious with him once he returned from injury, and that might impact how many minutes per game. I want to say, and again, just speculating, I would think Jalen was closer to
he was
Janai,
probably in the 26,
or maybe,
25,
even, maybe
26.
Even playing a little bit. Because Chaney wasn't playing that much at the beginning of conference play.
No, you're
and
right.
And then they started using him more. I don't expect it to be 5 starters playing 30 and 5 reserves playing 10. I would think there's a little bit more balance on the table than that. But no, I guess the question is, Bill, do you think Bruce would rather have – does he want to keep his options open with a guy who's only got a year left so that he can replace that scholarship however he wants after the season's over? Or do you think he'd like a guy with multiple years left where it's like you step in, you start, you learn the way we do things, and then the way Chad Baker-Mazzara and Chaney Johnson and Denver Jones evolved into – cornerstone pieces from year one to year two, or I think that's the hope, is that they're going to evolve into fixtures in the starting lineup in their second season. Maybe Auburn finds a guard and or a forward who could do something like that, right?
Yeah, I think so. I was just looking at RJ Godfrey's numbers. I mean, 36 games this past year, right at 15 minutes a game. You could say you're going to get at least that is what I think you could say.
We were speculating
to a big guy.
We were speculating yesterday on whether or not Janai Broome could be a preseason AP All-American, a preseason SEC Player of the Year. Auburn, I don't believe Auburn has ever had the preseason SEC Player of the Year on the roster. I think that award started in the 90s, and I don't believe they've ever had the preseason SEC Player of the Year. I don't believe
Chris Porter wasn't.
I don't believe so. I think I was looking at the.
Well, maybe he wasn't by that thing, but I do remember he was predicted by the media to be the Player of the Year.
Right. I think ever since the SEC, I saw a list of the SEC's preseason Player of the Year. Maybe they started doing it the year after Porter left.
Maybe.
And maybe it would relate back a little bit. But I don't believe the SEC Player of the Year has ever been on Auburn's roster. We were saying Jani Broome would probably be the odds-on favorite. Mark Sears could throw a wrench into that if he
Absolutely.
Wanted to come back. You know, Grant Nelson had an excellent tournament and could.
That could actually hurt. It's sort of like an MVP
You're right.
voting. Having two players that prominent on one team might prevent either from being the preseason pick.
If Broome, Sears, and Nelson had all moved on to the next level, I would have probably guessed Josh Hubbard. But I think with some of the older players, maybe Josh Hubbard gets outshined there. And there's also there would have been Reed Sheppard in this discussion if Mark Pope had been able to lure Reed Sheppard back to college basketball. But we get the news earlier today that Kentucky's Reed Sheppard is going into the NBA draft, and Reed Sheppard is foregoing his college eligibility. He is slamming the door on a return to college basketball. Reed Sheppard, there were projections earlier this year that had him as the number one overall pick in the NBA draft, believing that he could be somebody I think it was when the Spurs had the first overall pick. They thought that the Spurs might want to pair a shooter on the perimeter like Reed Sheppard with Victor Wembanyama. That might be the plan moving forward, is to have a really dominant interior player like Wembanyama, and then just find the best shooters possible around him. And Reed Sheppard might be the best shooter in the NBA draft this year. So Kentucky, the rebuild for Mark Pope gets a little bit more difficult because he can't hang on to a projected lottery pick. I feel like those odds were against him the whole time. The best pitch you can make for Kentucky is it better than you could be the number 5 overall pick or the number 7 overall pick in the NBA draft, which is where Reed Sheppard is projected right now. It just seems like it would be very difficult Kentucky not able to bring Reed Sheppard back. So there's a little bit, again, I mean, it's Auburn and Alabama. I mean, think about this, Bill. Auburn has its starting lineup. Like, there are teams in the SEC that don't have a player on the roster. Like, there are teams in the SEC that are scrambling and maybe it's not a scramble yet because there are enough players in the portal, and the NBA draft is gonna make even more players available to the pool. But the thought that if you're Bruce, you're rounding out your roster right now, you're finding the guard who's gonna play after JP Pegues, you're gonna find the forward who's gonna play after Jani and Chaney, while other teams are looking for
everything,
multiple starters. Yeah. I mean, Bama. You think about the job, like what if Nate Oates gets bad news about Sears and Nelson? Like what if Sears and Nelson set the NBA draft camp on fire, Jani Broome style, and if you're, I mean, even with as much talent and expectation as Nate Oates has going into this upcoming season, they could have to replace cornerstone pieces too. So I think it's not just the roster itself; it's the fact that they're largely done building this roster, and we're not even to April 20th yet. The spring semester is still going on at Auburn, and they've largely completed the. I mean, with Jani returning, I mean most of the minutes
all
on this
the big
team,
pieces yeah. are there. I mean, you're looking for something to try to even enhance it.
Right. I mean, you played 200 minutes total, right?
Right.
How many of them are already on the roster? 150, 160?
160 yeah. plus.
And there are other places where that number is double figures or zero.
I would say it's probably 170 plus. By the way, all right, Chris Porter, if he was an SEC preseason player of the year for the 99-2000 year, I went back and see a story. He was the top vote getter on the preseason AP All-America team. He was the only unanimous pick on the preseason All-SEC team. So maybe they didn't do a preseason Player of the Year, But Chris Porter definitely would be the last Auburn player. It wouldn't be unprecedented for Jahni Broome, but it would be the first time this century that Auburn's had a player with that type of notoriety. All right, we'll get to our first break here in hour number one. Again, Justin Ferguson joins us in hour number two. We'd like for you to join us here in hour number one. You can give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We're right back here on the Thursday Drive.
This is Zach Alsterbrook,
Bill Cameron, and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive, 25 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls, and let's get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Lynn gets us started. Hey, Lynn.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Let me try to run this by you and see if you agree with me. Based upon the shows that I'm hearing since this Auburn starting since this Auburn nucleus has returned,
mm-hmm.
to me, I get the feeling that it ranges from people being hard on them, i.e. the media, i.e. to a wake-up call, i.e. to asking people to get it. And I wonder, and I guess my question is it a wake-up call? Is it pressure based upon fans? Is it expectations of people doing better? Is it what?
Well, I think what it's going to be, good question, Lenny. I mean, it is the expectations are going to be there. Auburn was a team that won 27 games this past year. They have most of that nucleus back. Obviously, they'll bring in a new point guard and won't have Jalen Williams. So, but the expectations are going to be there. And
then adding an All-American like Broome to, I think, a team that already would have gone into the season. I mean, Pegues and the other guys.
I'm just saying, if you look at last year and you feel like, wow, you have a chance to be very competitive with last year's team, if you find somebody to take Jalen's spot or Chaney takes that step up and you get better guard play, then you might actually be better. But
such a luxury nowadays in college basketball to have the kind of stability that Auburn's going to have, because so few rosters bring back, especially when you look at, like, look at the reason there are going to be expectations, among other things. Look at the other teams that finished in the top six or the top eight of the SEC and look at how their rosters have changed
mm-hmm.
from the end of last season to now versus Auburn, which is a team that could have four starters who were on last year's NCAA tournament team, and J.P. Pegues, a highly sought-after point guard from the transfer portal and a senior in his own right. Like, that's the recipe, especially in a league where so many of the teams are going through different eras or different phases of a rebuild. Like, to have what you bring back from last year and to be able to build on it, I think it sets up a team where the expectations won't just be from Auburn fans. Like, there will
but I think to his point, Auburn fans now are going to be even more disappointed if Auburn doesn't make at least a second weekend run. They're going to expect more than that. Anything short, and I've heard some people going, well, okay, Bruce,
you know,
now it's on you. Now you got to prove it. And it's like, man, the guy's been winning like it's never happened here at Auburn. And, of course, it's disappointing when you get knocked out early. But I think the expectations are even higher now with Jahni returning.
I mean, I understand the frustration, but putting pressure or certainly, you know, the extreme version of getting rid of a coach because he wins a lot of regular season college basketball games or college football games or Major League Baseball games. Remember, like, guys like Joe Torre were running into that towards the end of his time with the Yankees, and he would say, look, it's a crapshoot when you get into the. I mean, that's look, part of the reason why we love the postseason in different sports here in America is because it's so unpredictable and it's such a crapshoot. And the NCAA tournament, maybe more than anything else, is an example of that. We don't play a best of seven to figure it
out.
No,
and you don't have 68 teams in most of the other tournaments.
So I would say the pressure is on it to get the absolute most out of your regular season, because the other thing in mind is the better you are in the regular season, the more favorable your draw is going to be.
The higher your seed should be.
And then, yes, you know, a one or a two, you know, it takes a pretty serious upset. Not that Auburn wasn't hit with a pretty serious upset this year in the Yale game, but it takes a pretty serious upset for a one or a two. If you remember this past year, all the ones and all the twos made it to the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament. So, yeah, I mean, there will be expectations, and that's because Auburn's bringing back as veteran a
as
group.
As proven a group on one team. And, I mean, because some other teams may be able to bring in players with the same amount or close to the same amount of experience, but they wouldn't have all been together,
and I would,
with the exception of one player.
I would think that, and there are teams, I mean, Houston's bringing back a lot. They lose Jamal Sheed to the NBA, which is to be expected because he's going to be a big draft pick. He's an NBA point guard. It would have been surprising to see him, even with the injury that ended his tournament, would have been surprising to see him play another year. But of the teams that were, like, the teams that were on the four line or better, top 16 teams from this year's NCAA tournament, I would think Auburn returns more than any of them. Maybe Alabama with Nelson and Sears back would be in position to have a similar.
That would be two huge pieces, yes.
Right. I mean, yeah, and they, you know, and there was there's some they've recruited well. There's some talent around them too. But no, I would say Auburn would be, it would be either alone in that group or among a very select group of the top 12 or 16 teams from this past year's NCAA tournament. As far as Auburn's, how much of last year's production they bring back.
We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar as we continue here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 26 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. It's Bill and Dan. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer will join us by phone in hour number two. Speaking of the phone, let's get back to it. And Drew is up first. Hey, Drew.
Hey, guys. I got two questions, and I'll hang up and listen. How much impact do you think getting the geese had on Broome's decision? And then my second question is, with basketball rosters being so small, how much input do you think current players on the roster have, and who teams target for transfers and all that?
That's, you know, I don't know that I'd ever really thought much about that as far as how much influence they have. I'm sure that players will talk about players they've either played with or against at times and bring them up once they see their name in the portal. And hey, it's perfectly fine for players to contact other players too.
I can tell you, you know, from a Troy standpoint, you know, it's you know, they're open to, you know, certainly if they remember scouting a player for an up, like, it's, and I think that more and more schools they'll look at who did we face, because we know more about those players. Who did we recruit out of high school,
right,
and finish?
Hey,
as
Auburn
a runner
faced
up
Janai, you know, before they got him. Auburn faced JP Pegues this past year.
Yeah. So I mean, it is funny how that's worked out a couple of times. You know, we're a former opponent, but I'm sure if a player has an idea, I would think that suggestions are welcome. You know, in the Auburn coaching office, and then there's also there's the thought that maybe if the coaches have a guy in mind, they'll want input from players who have seen them before or played against them or played with them.
Right, grew up, you know, in the same region or something like that. I think that's a very interesting question about Janai's decision. I think he wanted to return to Auburn. I surely don't think it hurt to be able to add a proven experienced point guard
JP. I don't think Janai was coming back to a team that wasn't going to be in a position to contend.
Right.
Like if this roster had broken apart after the season, you know, if Chad Baker had moved on, and if other guys had called it a career, if Denver Jones had decided to start playing pro ball, and you know, if it were that sort of situation, I don't know if Jani Broome, even if he wants to come back to college basketball, I don't know if he's necessarily...
He would have had plenty of options.
Oh, believe me. Yeah, yes. I mean, I think there's, you know what, there's a lot of Tyson Chicken money.
Yeah.
That would have been, you know, in play for Jani Broome. Eric Musselman would have been working the phones in Los Angeles to try to land a, you know, his Caleb Williams, you know, for his arrival out there. So I think the fact that the Jani is choosing Auburn, he believes in the roster. I would think that that's part of it, and then he's also he's being taken care of, you know, however else he needs to decide to make a return like this. Good stuff, Drew.
Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. Terry is next. Hey, Terry.
Hey, Terry.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Dan. How's it going?
Doing all right. Good to hear from you.
Good to talk to you as always.
Hey, Terry. Terry? Hold on, Terry. Where's Bo going next week? You got a prediction?
No, but Dan, I know this. No first round quarterback has ever been a bust, right?
First rounders have been a bust. You know what I've seen a lot of with Bo, and I want to get to your actual point, Terry, but since you called, we'll bring this up. I've seen a lot of folks projecting, and I think Todd McShay or Mel Kiper had this recently, where they think the first round could end, Bo Nix could be the best quarterback still on the board, and there could be sort of a market among the teams that still need a quarterback. There could be a market, and Bo could be one of the first two or three names off the board to start the second round, because teams that wait on a quarterback could see him as the option if they missed out on probably going to be five quarterbacks taken in the first round. It looks like it's going to be Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, McCarthy from Michigan, and Penix Jr. from Washington. Could be five quarterbacks going in the first round. Could be more than five teams looking quarterback early. I'd say outside shot of a first round selection for Bo, but I think some of these experts might be right that he could be one of the first couple names off the board in the second.
And I don't understand the player thinking. This is Terry's thinking. If I'd love to go 28 or down, somewhere around 28 or 29 or 30, go to the Kansas City Chiefs or the Buffalo Bills, somebody right there on the cusp of the playoffs. I don't want to go to a terrible team and make them worse.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't hurt to be learning a system and know that there's going to be a lot of talent around you when you do get a chance.
Chiefs and the Bills, though, I mean, there's a question of how long it would be before you're the starter,
right?
If you go there, because you got franchise quarterbacks in their prime.
You have the easiest job in football, Dan. You sit on the sideline, collect a big boy, big old fat.
Yeah, but I think there are teams that think Bo Nix could be their starter, right? Like, it's not a matter of, like, you know, I don't think you draft a backup late in the first round. I don't think you draft a backup early in the second.
I think you take a backup in the middle.
The Giants have been a team. You know, folks think they have other needs they need to go after early in the draft, but they're not necessarily sold on Daniel Jones, and maybe they'd be looking to replace him later on with a quarterback like Bo Nix. So I don't know. I think there's a chance Bo. I would even say, first round possibility is there. If he goes late in the first round, I would think that it's a bad team moving to get him and not a team secure at the quarterback spot, but your point is a good one. If the later you go in the first round, the better the team is, and you know, if a team, you know, there are good teams that know in the short term what they're doing at quarterback, but might draft somebody, give them a year or two, and then make them the starter after that.
Well, I know you guys can always count on me for calling up and throw cold water on a situation. Although Broome comeback is huge, gigantic. But am I wrong that Auburn's problems has been the backcourt, the lack of size, the lack of consistency overall?
I wouldn't say lack of size. I mean, Mark Sears is a guy that isn't as tall as Aiden Holloway. But
Zakai Ziegler was a starting guard at Tennessee this year, and he's 5'8".
But lack of consistency, yes, I would agree there. And J.P. Pegues is a guy who, is more than just solid. I mean, he's a guy that was one of the he's all Southern Conference.
JP
he was one of the top players in that league.
JP comes to Auburn. I think this is an important distinction too, Terry, because it's a lot like quarterback, where the generally speaking, quarterbacks in college football get better the more college football they play, and that's why seniors tend to be, you know, at the top of a lot of these awards lists, and, you know, Heisman Trophy, like, stuff like that makes sense. If you think about JP Pegues, he is far more experienced as a college basketball point guard than Trey Donaldson or Aiden Holloway were last year. He's more experienced than Wendell was when Wendell got to Auburn after 1 year at Eastern Kentucky. Sharif Cooper was a freshman. Mm-hmm. Javon McCormick, who had a good season as Auburn's starting point guard in 1920. Javon was a JUCO guy who'd spent 1 year as Jared's backup. Like, I think there's, you know, if point guard you know, if point guard has been at times the weakness of the team over these last couple of seasons, going out and adding J.P. Pegues is an attempt to address that by bringing in someone who is more, as a player, is more similar to Jarrett Harper than any point guard Auburn has had since Jarrett Harper. He's more like Jared than Javon
Except
or Sharif.
He's a little bigger.
A little bigger. Yeah. But although Jared had ways of neutralizing that too, right?
Jared had extremely long arms.
I was going to say the wingspan and the speed. Like Jared could neutralize the lack of sheer height, you know, with other things. But no, I think Pegues is more like Jared than Javon or Sharif or Wendell Green or the guys that Auburn had last year. That's another reason to think the end result could be different.
What do you guys think we'll see? End up seeing guys coming back more often because of NIL and things like that.
Yes,
absolutely.
I think non-lottery
guys.
I think in football there's still a pressure to start your career as quickly as possible and get into an NFL system. And there's a question of can you really jump from a sixth round pick to a first round pick in a year in the NFL, or are they going to be able to identify talent? Basketball is different. It's really uncertain for guys after the first round, and even late first rounders can delay that for a year and still be late first rounders. I think if you're not a lottery pick and you're playing for a superpower, you have a real decision to make every year in college basketball as to whether or not you want to extend your career.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a good night.
Appreciate it, Terry. Good hearing from you. 334-321-1390.
The thought of players like Broome and Sears coming back to college basketball is a sign of that, isn't it?
Kidding.
A couple years ago, there's no doubt. 2019. No way. 5 years
Absolutely.
Ago, pre-NIL, no way those guys are playing another year of college basketball.
So that has actually helped college basketball. It's helping college basketball. All right, I tell you what, we'll get one more.
You're not sure all of the new rules are helping.
No, but it has helped college basketball is what I think NIL has done. We'll get one more before we get to our final break of hour number one, and John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon. I was going to ask y'all's opinion. You think Bruce encouraged Aiden and Trey to enter the portal because they left quick? And
yeah, I will put it in sort of two different terms. I don't think that Bruce discouraged Aiden, but no, I don't think that there was any push of Trey. That's my feeling.
I don't know if Bruce had an appetite to give Trey 30 minutes a game this upcoming season.
But I think he would have.
I think they would have. I think they would
definitely liked having him back.
I mean, the fact that they're looking for another guard, I think this team, and my guess, I'm outside looking in, I think this team would have loved to have Trey Donaldson as the backup to JP Pegues this year. And then after JP leaves, Trey's got a year of eligibility left. Maybe he's the starter in his senior year. Maybe he makes a decision after that. But he was a well liked, well respected.
Yeah, I think the thought was not to say, could come back and be the backup point and play some at the two.
Yeah, and that's not to say that Aiden wasn't well liked or well respected. I don't want to frame it like Trey was Trey. But I do get the feeling that they would have loved to have Trey back under. I think there was always sort of the thought that Aiden was going to want more playing time if he stuck around.
I don't know. To me, getting back to Aiden, for him to be a starting player on Auburn's team, and then go visit Alabama. That just seems like that's sour grapes, or he had a bad experience somewhere.
Well, I mean, maybe, but then let me ask you: Did
top two team in the SEC right now?
That's true. They are the top two teams in the SEC. It looks like.
I'm not denying that. I'm just saying, as an Auburn player,
how did you feel about Auburn picking up Antonio Kite or trying to get visits from multiple Alabama football players went in the portal?
You know what, folks got over it when KD Johnson visited Auburn, and George is a pretty big rival. Like,
yeah, nobody knew who KD Johnson was.
You had a better freshman year than Aiden did.
Katie,
that'd be
sure
like
did.
The starting quarterback or running back transferring from Alabama to
Katie
Auburn.
Katie was Georgia's most highly touted signee that year. The thing is, for the kids, for most kids though these days, it's just opportunity, it's business. It doesn't have anything. I don't think that rivalry is the underlying main motive. Yep. Maybe there's a little in there.
I don't think I'll agree with Bill on this. I don't think that a desire to stick it to Auburn is the primary factor in Aiden Holloway's recruiting. If he can do that and check off every single box, maybe he'll want to.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of reasons that have nothing to do with Auburn as to why Aiden Holloway would want to go to Alabama. Yeah.
No, I do think he would thrive if you're just going to let him shoot continuously. I'm sure he would thrive in a Nate Oates system, just like a Steph Curry always has 30 points a game when he shoots it.
And if
I think he's a better fit for that.
Curry's percentages are excellent too. I would point out Curry's not jacking up. Curry's not missing a ton of shots. You know, to get those to
not
get those
usually.
30 points.
No.
I think that Holloway. You know, we were just talking about the possibility of building a bridge at Auburn. You have a underclassman point guard backing up J.P. Pegues, and then maybe that underclassman grows into the starter a year later. Mark Sears will be playing, if he returns to Alabama, Mark Sears will be playing his last year of college basketball. I think the possibility of Holloway backing up Sears, getting better, and then being the starter the year after Sears is gone, I think that's an attractive proposition to Nate Oates and company.
One more thing. You're talking about NIL helping the players hang around longer. I remember several years ago there was several players that would have stayed if they had the opportunity. I think JT Thor and a few others, but they said they just had to go and make a living. So that will help a little bit for the college game.
That's absolutely right.
I appreciate y'all's time.
Hey, John, thanks for the call. We'll get to our final break back with more of your phone calls. Who do we have up next?
Bill,
hold on. You're up when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment here of hour number one, and let's get right back to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Bill is next. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. The previous caller kind of touched on all my talking points. I'm kind of out of ammunition here, but I did think that, I suspected, and I'm probably wrong about that, but it seemed like there was some sour grapes there with the Holloway. But like you said, it's probably just business. I think he's from North Carolina, so I was kind of surprised he'd want to go to Alabama. But I was under the impression that his family and him reached out to Alabama.
That's what I heard. I mean, the thing is, being at Auburn, you'd be pretty darn familiar with Alabama. And then them making the Final Four run and their style of basketball, I can see where that could be pretty appealing if he felt like the playing opportunity was there.
Yeah, of course, I have a hard time believing he would go to Alabama to be Sears backup.
Yeah,
this
me
year,
too.
But one last point. This is kind of off subject a little bit, but whatever happened to Austin Wiley? Did he ever make it to the NBA?
No, I believe he was playing overseas.
Let me check on that. I do not know the latest on Austin Wiley and how if he extended his professional basketball career. I think the last I heard, I want to say it was Greece or Turkey.
Yeah, I was thinking it was
Turkey. Sounds right.
Yeah, that does sound right. But I believe that he wound up overseas. You know, and he needed to start playing too because he's got some knee problems that probably going to limit the length of his career.
Yeah, well, I'm glad he was a nice kid. I'm glad he found something to do over there. So, anyway, guys, I enjoyed the show. It was good to see you guys. Finally, meet you guys last week.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, I was enjoyed the show. And War Eagle.
Appreciate the call, Bill. Before we get to the top of the hour, a couple of notes from the football transfer portal. Auburn is scheduled to get a visit from another edge rusher. Now, Jalik Kelly, who was a Miami signee, has been at the University of Miami the last couple of years, a top 100 recruit out of high school, had 4 or 5 sacks as a freshman, missed most of this past year as an with injury. So he's got at least 2, maybe 3 years of eligibility, 6'5", 250, visiting Central Florida and Missouri this weekend, then expected to visit Auburn next week. I think more and more folks are feeling like Auburn's in very good shape on Kieron Crawford, who we've talked about the last few days, the Arkansas State transfer, who's out of Memphis from the same high school where Hugh Freeze was. And, Dan, you were reading some info about him that he's a latecomer to football.
Yeah, Chris Hummer had this, you know, I guess Rivaldo Fairweather-esque vibes here,
right?
where this is a guy who was a basketball player, during his junior and senior years. It was sort of, you know, it was decided, hey, you're probably not going to be able to play your way to Division I basketball, but your athleticism is intriguing. Maybe you need to come, maybe you need to come practice with the football team. And I guess the Chris Hummer story is that position coach, defensive ends coach at the high school, saw him practice for minutes and said, "This is a Division I college football player that has just arrived at my practice." So what a jackpot that defensive ends coach hit, right? I mean, although he had to probably do some teaching with a kid coming over from basketball, but sure enough, Division I Arkansas State could very well be in the SEC next year.
And Bill asked, and you're right, Dan, playing for a team in Turkey. I'm trying to see what team it is. But in the Champions League,
I believe he's
in the playoffs. He had a double double in their last game: 16 points, 10 rebounds, and a couple of blocks.
He's at Tofas Bursa.
Okay,
he's with Bursa this year.
I couldn't figure which of the teams they were talking about.
Speak a little Turkish, so yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, we will be back with hour number two of the drive. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer joins us by phone. Stick with us here on this Thursday drive.
Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls here in the studio. And we're joined by our good friend from and regular Thursday host/special guest.
Ferg cannot be here today. He is waiting in line for the Taylor Swift album tonight. He is there. You know, it's dropping at midnight.
In line. I like that.
It's dropping in midnight, at midnight. And he is, my understanding is he is camped out, you know, to be first in line.
I can talk about things like that when you really had to wait in line to get the physical.
Vinyl
in your hand.
I did that for a Red Hot Chili Peppers album years and years ago, but it's been a long time since I've waited. Ferg, is that something you've ever? Justin Ferguson, by the way, joins us from the Auburn Observer. Not waiting in line for the Taylor Swift album, to the best of my knowledge. But Ferg, have you ever waited in line for a piece of physical media to be released, or for concert tickets, or something that you've seen probably romanticized in media, about the 70s or the 80s or the 90s?
Yeah, we did a couple of times. We did a go to GameStop at midnight to get new NCAA football game. We did that a couple times when I was in high school. That's the one I can think of. I can't remember ever doing that.
That you just got from Bill Cameron was
because of Suns.
Yeah, that was because the Suns were also going to the game. Yeah. It's.
And although I would love the visual of Bill waiting in line for a copy of NCAA. But yeah, no, I was kind of, it's interesting because I obviously bought CDs and all that, but it was never you had to be there at a certain time kind of thing for the releases because I think I was kind of towards the end of that life cycle for that, because by the time I was in high school, everybody was, iPods, MP3 players, stuff like that were kind of all the rage at that point. But, yeah, definitely did it for video games and definitely did it a few times, I know, for NCAA.
Well, someday when we just need people to be bored to death, I can talk about the days of the Columbia Record Club and going out to record shops when you knew albums were scheduled to be released so you could get one of the very first copies that came in and get the plastic off and start scratching them up unintentionally.
Oh, yeah.
And then there were a couple of times, I can remember specifically Eagles and Elton John were a couple of long line, get there early, beat the line and wait, overnight if necessary to be able to get front row tickets.
Yeah, that's super cool because I've never done that for a concert before, but that's one of those things where you're just like,
I think that would just be really, really cool. I mean, the last time I waited in line for something, and some people know this, the last time I waited in line for something was around this time last year when the Buc-ee's opened, and me and Dustin got in line to be one of the first people in there at 4 a.m. But yeah, that's really the last time I've ever done anything like that.
Yeah, my wait in line these days is when I'm in the queue for concert tickets and things like that. It's like, okay, you're in the queue and you're coming up, and it's like, how quickly can you get in, find those seats, and get them? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's the queue stuff's crazy because I know, like, this whole topic started with Taylor Swift, and like, yeah, that was I tried to get tickets, for our big tour, and it was just like impossible. I couldn't do it. So I don't know, like, there's so many things you can kind of use to beat the robots and, you know, all that when it comes to buying.
Do you know the workaround that younger Cameron thought of to go see Taylor Swift because the tickets were so hard to find here in the United States?
It went overseas.
There's a clue right there.
That's exactly right.
I'd heard someone else say that it was easier to
cheaper, they said.
It was cheaper to fly to Europe and get a hotel and tickets to Taylor Swift in Europe than it was to go to some of these American shows.
I had a friend of mine who went to, I think it was her show in Denmark, I think. Because yeah, it was cheaper than going to the concert that was literally, you know, two blocks away from her apartment in Chicago.
It's incredible. So yeah, so speaking of waiting in line and speaking of crowded arenas, Jahni Broome returning to Auburn next year, I think, sets off.
There's not going to be any tickets available again.
This is Beatlemania for the Auburn men's basketball team, and to bring back of the 200 minutes a game that you're expecting to give your lineup, Auburn probably has 160, maybe even 170 of them in the fold now with the guys they've brought back, plus incoming contributions from Pettiford and from JP Pegues.
I'm thinking you may have 175.
You know, there's also the other incoming freshman. I also am guilty of forgetting.
Yeah,
Ja'Kai Howard,
who could also get some of these minutes at the four that we're talking about, depending on how much they want to put on the plate of a true freshman. But Justin, your instant reaction to the news that Jahni Broome is going to use his last year of college basketball eligibility. He's not going to the NBA draft. He's coming back to Auburn.
It's a special thing, and you know, we talked about it on our podcast that went up this morning. But the comparison I keep going back to is the number of factors that had to fall into place for somebody like Suni Lee to compete at Auburn. You're thinking of the same thing here for Jahni Broome to get a fifth season. And, you know, it's because he was in the COVID year and because he was the last guy, you know, he was the youngest of those players who got that COVID waiver that got that fifth year. So you get this sense where Auburn is going all in on experience. You bring back Denver Jones, Chad Baker-Mazzara, and Dylan Cardwell. And, you know, you're adding J.P. Pegues into the fold, and Chaney Johnson's back. And, you know, you've got you've got this one big question is, will the guy who was the All-American come back? And, you know, over the last couple of weeks, everything started shifting a lot more towards, hey, he is going to come back. And so the announcement, just huge for Auburn. You know, this was something that I think a lot of Auburn fans are really happy about, and they should be. But, like, I'll also say this about this move. Do not take it for granted, because Auburn had to fight to get this happen, because Jahni Broome, like, could have gone pro, could have gotten the second round, and you could see, you know, some teams in the second round, they'll give you guaranteed money, some they'll put you on a two-way deal. That's good money. That's $500,000 or more. And I'm sure there were people in his ear, you know, and we've heard, you know, stuff linking, like, North Carolina and Kansas to this, but, like, there were people in his ear saying, hey, man, you go in the transfer portal, there's no telling what kind of bill you can run up trying to get another year. I mean, there was the report from Jeff Goodman this week. Omar Bello got $1.2 million to go to Indiana. I mean, what do you think about a guy like Jahni Broome, who was an All-American, especially on a team that was as successful as this Auburn team was? So it's huge. It's monumental. I mean,
well, you've got Duke
all in on experience, you lean on it.
You know, we were saying earlier, like the possible. I mean, Duke, UConn, and Kansas are all looking for new posts, and then you've got new coaches at Kentucky, Arkansas, and USC who need to make big splashes in year one and convince everybody that they can land talent. I mean, the market, the open market for Jahni Broome would have been eye watering. Like, you know, I think that the it's hard to imagine a team that wouldn't have envisioned themselves as trying to get into that sweepstakes. And so for Auburn to land him, for Auburn to convince him to not just stay in college basketball, but stay in Auburn, it's huge for this coaching staff.
It's huge, and I think it shows just the health of the program, the investment in the program, and just what they could be building this year. Because you bring a guy like Jahni Broome back. I wrote about it today at the Observer. It's been 25 years since Auburn's had an All-American come back for another year, and that was, you know, when Doc Robinson, Chris Porter were All-Americans in the late 90s. It's been, you know, nearly 40 years since they've had a guy repeat as an All-American. Guys like this just don't come back. And it's just the number of factors that fell into place that made it so that Auburn could, you know, do it. When you talk about NIL and COVID waivers and the success they've had the last few seasons, when the development of Jahni Broome, you know, just the kind of platform he's been on being at Auburn, you know, it just everything worked out in Auburn's favor, and they still had to fight like heck to keep him around. But yeah, I mean, this is huge, because not only are you getting somebody back who was an All-American, you're getting somebody who is about as consistent as you're going to find in college basketball last year. Like his 16 points, 8 rebounds, few blocks, few assists a game. It wasn't that he just averaged that. He was doing that pretty much every game. And there weren't really any valleys or drop-offs in his game last season. And I mean, that's just such a known quantity to have. And you're in a college basketball landscape where there's just not a lot of known quantities from year to year because of the way rosters turn over.
And we had a caller a little while ago that asked a question I thought was really interesting. He said, how much did we think the addition of J.P. Pegues played into Jahni's decision? Because it wouldn't have been nearly as attractive for Jahni to come back not knowing who's going to be, you know, running the point or handling the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when you say what was Auburn's biggest weakness last season, and it was at times when the guard play didn't work out, the inexperience showed, and they weren't as successful, didn't score as much as they usually did at the point guard spot last year. Well, what do? You go get J.P. Pegues, a guy who's got a lot of experience, a guy who's played in the NCAA tournament, who's hit big shots against really good teams before, who is a great ball handler, who's a good defender, who's just got, you know, he's just got a lot that you want to check off on a list of point guard for point guards, and Jahni Broome, and that's your best friend right there if you're a five man to have a point guard. Also, look, one of J.P. Pegues is probably his best attribute when you look at just kind of how he scores and when he scores as a pick and roll ball handler, who's really good at that high ball screen. Jahni Broome, they spammed it all last season to great success with point guards that were good, but you could tell that they could have taken a step forward and upgraded the position. Auburn goes and does that, and now, you know, that's the thing. It's like you showed that you're going all in with this team, you know, with experience, you know, with talent, you know, at the high level, just knowing, like, you know, we've talked about it on our podcast, kind of like a Last Dance kind of vibes for this team. It's just they want to go all in. And, you know, getting J.P. Pegues was a really good selling point for them to show with Jahni Broome.
How rare is it? I mean, we were thinking of the top, you know, of the teams that were on the four line or better from this year's NCAA tournament, top 16 teams in the field. How rare is it to bring back this much from a previous year's team, for a team that achieved the way Auburn did? I would think that, I mean, Alabama could bring back Sears and Nelson, yeah, which would be huge for them, but pretty much everyone else from that top line. Houston has brought back mostly, you know, they've retained the core, but Sheed was such a huge part of what Houston was doing, and he's moving on to the NBA. I would think of the teams that were among the top 10, 15, 20 teams in college basketball last year, Auburn brings back as much as any of them.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Auburn and Alabama for sure. Those are the two names that really jump to mind. You look at just around the SEC, Tennessee's hitting the reset button. You know, they went all in on this past team, and, you know, obviously reap the rewards of it. You know, UConn's going to be hitting that reset button. Purdue, no more Zach. You start going down the line. Carolina and Duke obviously having some big roster turnover this year. I mean, you just go down and you see, you know, in this day and age, you just don't expect it. You have to reinvent yourself year after year. And Auburn's going to tweak themselves, but they're not going to reinvent themselves. And you know, when you come off of a 27-win season and you say, hey, we feel like we upgraded, you know, at the point guard spot. We've got good depth again. We're bringing in, you know, some high caliber talent, you know, from as freshmen to help us out. And, oh, by the way, you know, three of our top four scorers from last year and four of your top six guys in terms of player efficiency rating last season, all those guys are coming back. I mean, that is super rare for any college basketball team, much less one that was as successful as Auburn was last season.
All right, so what's next? What's the next most pressing need for Auburn? Obviously, we'd been saying Janai was the biggest piece, but point guard was the biggest need. Little help in the front and backcourt. And who sort of fits the bill?
Yeah, it's interesting. Over the past weekend, you know, you saw Auburn, you know, reportedly linked to a couple of guys that make a lot of sense at the power forward, maybe big three kind of position, but mostly guys who are power forwards. Jacoby Coles from TCU was mentioned. He's a guy who scored 10 points off the bench last year, per game off the bench last year for a TCU team that went to the NCAA tournament. You know, pretty good player that, you know, kind of a stretch four, good rebounder, good defender, really racked up a lot of blocks and steals on that TCU team last season. Auburn's one of the teams that's reached out to him. He checks a lot of boxes when you think of somebody who could compete with Chaney Johnson and, you know, kind of really solidify that power forward spot in the absence of Jalen Williams, with him moving on after, you know, expiring his eligibility. The other one there, R.J. Godfrey,
right,
from Clemson. So it was there. He was there, probably their best player off the bench this past season. Not a ton of points, but just did some of everything really, really well. That was an Elite Eight team. He had a dozen against Bama in that Elite Eight game. Was a really big factor. Atlanta kid, you know, makes a lot of sense that Auburn would go after somebody like him. So I look at power forward and I see, you know, that's the spot you want to kind of shore up.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there might be some times next season where you play Janai Broome and Dylan Carwell together. Yes, you really like what you have in Chaney Johnson. But I do think Auburn would love to have some kind of stability back there at that four spot. And, you know, getting somebody who can at the very least compete with Chaney Johnson would be huge there. And then, yeah, I think they could use another point guard, another true point guard. It's interesting. You could have – say you have 80 minutes to separate between your ones and your twos. 80 minutes between – you know, what you've got at J.P. Pegues, Denver Jones, and Tahad Pettiford, that makes a ton of sense, right?
Right.
But I think you don't want, like, you can do that as your main rotation, but I don't think you want to go into a season putting all your emphasis in that. So we've talked about it before. If they could clone Javon McCormick and get him, you know, this season, like a player like that would be huge. A point guard, a true point guard who might have, some, you know, more than 1 year of eligibility left, just a guy that you could get from a, you know, lower school and say, hey, come play a role on us, role for us. You might not get a ton of minutes, but maybe you can grow into something and you can help us win a championship. I think that would be something they would want to do. They've been linked to a couple of, you know, even after getting the Geese, they've been linked to a couple of, you know, small school point guards that would kind of make sense. They had one here recently from Morehead State who missed all last season with an injury. So that's kind of one of those things you could see maybe taking a chance on somebody like that. But, yeah, I think you got a couple spots to play with. You don't have to necessarily go get another starting quality player, but I do think you want to shore up some stuff at power forward, shore up some stuff at point guard, and just know that you can let it, you know, let those guys battle it out and figure out what that rotation looks like in the backcourt and front.
Talking with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in hour number two of the Thursday Drive. And the second hour of the show brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. We'll get to our first break. One more segment with Ferg when we return here on the Thursday Drive.
Trust Dixie Overhead Door to receive back on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls here in the studio. And on the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Well, Ferg, we were talking some basketball there. Let's shift gears, talk a little football transfer portal. I mean, Auburn has had a couple of guys go in. I guess another non-scholarship player, Garrison Walker, entering the portal today. But there are a couple of bits of news. A former Miami defensive end, rush end, and Najalik Kelly is expected to be visiting Auburn. They no question they're targeting defensive linemen and as Hugh Freeze said, possibly receivers.
Yeah, no, this has been an interesting week for sure, because you haven't gotten like the big, oh, this is, you know, a ton of stuff happening, you know, in the transfer portal, like some people kind of predicted. I never thought that was going to be the case for Auburn, but even so, it just seems it's kind of been a little bit tamer. But, yeah, you've got, you know, you had Philippa Bleedy in for a visit this week. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got, you got a big name, you know, targeted from Penn State at wide receiver coming in this weekend as well, or, you know, coming in soon, I should say.
Yeah, and getting the first visit in the transfer portal is usually really significant.
Yes, it is, because, I mean, Auburn ran into this last year where they would have guys lined up for visits and then they'd never make it. You know, these guys would go to their first visit and commit and sign right there. So, yeah, to be able to, you know, get these first visits for some of these guys, I think is big. And Auburn, you know, Auburn doesn't have to go crazy in the portal. They can kind of shop around a little bit, but yeah, defensive linemen, edge rushers, you got the edge rusher from Arkansas State's been mentioned as well.
Mm-hmm.
Wide receivers, you know, just get a couple of pieces there at some of these spots, fill in where you might, you know, feel a little thin at some other areas, you'll be fine. But I will say this, you know, what is this? This is day three of the portal being open, and for Auburn to only have a couple guys in, I think that's a pretty good sign.
Yeah, it is a bit of a surprise. It surprised me. Now Jason Caldwell was talking yesterday, and you know, he was saying that he feels that the fact that so many players from the SEC that might have been thinking about entering the portal wanting to stay in the Southeastern mm-hmm. Conference, that's a deterrent, because you can't transfer and be eligible this coming fall in the conference.
Yeah, I think that's a huge, huge thing. And I think it's part of the reason why we're not seeing very many. Like, when you talk about teams that have had exoduses of talent, or, like, who are trying really hard to bring a bunch of folks in, it's not teams in the SEC. And I think part of that is because, you know, these SEC teams have done a really good job of, you know, building out their rosters. But, yeah, I mean, if you want to continue to play at a high level, you know, you can't stay in this conference if you want to transfer. So, yeah, I think that's something that's definitely a deterrent to some of these dudes at this point in the offseason.
Well, you remember too that everyone on a roster now had the option to transfer back in December when the portal opened after the season ended, and so
yep.
You know, it's not. I guess that portal was so busy, right? And it's going to be every year. Like, the portal that opens as soon as the season ends, I feel like is mm-hmm. going to. I mean, maybe we've settled into a situation where the portal you get
sort of like signing period where more players sign in the early signing period,
the
portal, players jump into the early portal.
The real portal activity, not that you can't add to your roster or lose a key piece now, but the real portal activity starts the day the season ends, and it's that next 30, 45 days where your players are all making their decision and you have to go try to recruit players from everywhere else that have gone into the portal.
I think something that both the portal and the signing periods have in common is the advantage there is to players for going through spring practice.
Absolutely. And just in learning where you stand and where you sit. Because I think if you want to make a move now, okay, well, you know where you're going to sit. But, like, it is very important for guys to go through spring ball. If they want to play, you know, it's you got to be a really talented dude to be able to jump into the transfer portal, stay at a similar level of, you know, competition, and then go, you know, somewhere and just in the course of the summer and in fall camp, find a way to get on the field a good bit. Like, you got to be a really, really talented guy to do that.
And maybe it's because I'm focusing and looking to checking anytime there's a defensive lineman or a receiver, but it seems like there aren't as many quarterbacks that are jumping into the portal. I mean, it's certain positions that it might be easier for you not to for you to be able to come in and be able to contribute in the fall without going through spring.
We were talking about the quarterbacks beyond Peyton Thorne on this depth chart, and if one of them wanted to go into the portal, I don't know a place, with all due respect to Hank or Holden, I think it would be really tough for either of them to go into the portal right now and find a starting job in Division I football, in bowl subdivision football, between now and the start of this season. Like, to leave leave now, most places have already gone through spring practice with a quarterback, and if they want to replace that quarterback, they're going to want to replace it with somebody who's played Division I football more than either Hank Brown or Holden Gurner. So I think there are positions, especially quarterback, where unless you're going to be able to go from backup to starter, you're probably better off where you are now. And you know, you try again after the season's over in December.
No, I absolutely agree. I mean, you know, and I think the other thing that's at play here with those guys is we don't really know what the pecking order looks like, you know, behind Peyton Thorne right now. Like, we have an idea, but it's mostly based on seniority. And, you know, I think, you know, as Hugh Freeze has said, those guys also still have a chance to win the job. You know, they have not – you know, given it, just handed it to Peyton Thorne yet, even though he is the favorite right now. And I think that's something to keep in mind as well. I mean, these guys aren't out of woods by any means when it comes to, you know, being done competing for the starting job at Auburn, much less, you know, the number two spot.
But I am really surprised that we haven't seen a few more scholarship players that didn't look like they were at, you know, at the top of the pecking order entering the portal, aren't you?
Yeah, no, I am. I really am. I thought we'd have probably seen more at this point. You know, I wonder what that's going to look like over these next couple of weeks. You know, if you see more, there's usually a surprise or two as well every transfer cycle, and we haven't seen one of those yet either. So, you know, I would keep my head on a swivel for anything if you're an Auburn fan. But I would also, you know, think that. I think a good sign about where your program's at and the health and kind of the chemistry of this team is that you just don't have a lot of people who are unhappy at this point.
Nah, you're absolutely right. That is a good point about the chemistry of this team.
And that's something we've been hearing from players in the spring, right, is that, you know, last year you had a bunch of guys that were new, you had some holdovers, and it was, I think it's sort of natural. You had some guys that did not have the same level of enthusiasm about what they were going through than the players that are, you know, that ended up, emerging as leaders and being sort of the most enthusiastic guys now. And so, yeah, it feels like, you know, the difference would be they've, you know, it's more than ever before in college football, right? You don't really have an excuse to be somewhere unhappy, right? Like you're given ample opportunity to remove yourself from the situation if you're unhappy. And it's, I think that's going to make it to where, if you got locker room problems, it's worse than ever before. Because, you know, you've got control over who's in that locker room more than ever, and you know if it's bad, it's gonna show up.
No, 100%. And I think again that you see some healthy programs and you see some not so healthy programs this time of year. And you know, I'm not saying Auburn's going to be immune from losing players and maybe even players that they want to keep around. But I mean, I do think it is very, very telling that we are at this point in the portal, and we're looking around being like, okay, where's the action at? And that's a good sign, at least for the outgoing part of it.
Yeah, so it'll be really interesting to follow. It looks like Auburn has a few players. You mentioned Keandre Lambert-Smith, the Penn State receiver, is supposed to be coming in. The Nijalik Kelly is a Miami defensive receiver. Another edge rusher is supposed to be coming in. Keron Crawford, I don't know, has he been on campus? I'm seeing people that are projecting him to Auburn now.
Oh, wow. No, I'm not aware if he's already made it to campus or not. But, yeah, I mean, that's another one that you would look at. And look at the production he's had there. I mean, that's not just getting a depth guy. That's getting a guy who can come out and play, you know, right away and contribute for you. So, yeah, I mean, I think – that's the thing for Auburn. I think they have really changed up some of their strategy in the portal because you heard Hugh Freeze talk about it this past year. He's like, yeah, we would bring kids in, or we would say, hey, we're going to come. You're going to be in a visit here, and then they'd go somewhere else and
never make it. That's right.
And so be a little bit more aggressive early on with these visits. I think that's a really good sign.
Yeah, and I was reading the Chris Hummer article about Crawford, and he is a very late arrival to football. Like apparently he was mm-hmm. a basketball player who was convinced between his junior and senior seasons to go walk over to football practice and instantly took to the defensive end position.
Yeah, I mean, and you like those developmental pieces for sure, guys that you feel like still have some more room to hit their ceiling, you know, as prospects. And yeah, I think if you're Auburn, like at the edge rusher spot, like you love Jalen McLeod, right? And you want to keep him healthy. You love the kids that you got at the moment, you know, with Jamonte Waller, Amaris Williams, Joe Phillips. But you know, if you can find somebody that can contribute, the one I think of that would be kind of a comparison to kind of pull off. You know, he wasn't a household name, but I thought the year Marcus Bragg was at Auburn, I thought he gave, you know, some quality reps at that edge rusher spot. And I feel like if Auburn could go land another one of those guys, knowing what they've got in McLeod, what they've got in these young guys, it'd be a really good spot for him to be in.
Yeah, if they get Crawford and or Kelly, that's a couple of guys that gives you someone in between that senior and the freshman that are working as well, and someone that could play and contribute and, you know, push for starting as well. So, I mean, that's a perfect situation, and you can tell they're going after those guys as well as you mentioned Bleedy and some other true inside defensive players.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's the position of immediate need right now for Auburn. You really like how the way those guys played in the spring game, especially with the way they stopped the run, but, like, you just need more, mm-hmm. You know. The numbers there aren't where you'd like them to be compared to other spots on the field. So get some big dudes who can contribute right away. I think they hit on Gage Keys and Trill Carter. They like what they've got, but they'd love to have more, at this point in the offseason.
Great stuff. As always, Justin, know you've got quite a few things going on. As moving's always a lot of fun, at least as we were saying a little earlier. The weather's cooperating. It's not the hottest, and it's not raining, so good luck with that. But before you go, let everybody know what's coming up on The Observer and how they can get it if they don't already.
Yeah, it's been a big week at The Observer. Wrote about, did a film room on J.P. Begis. Did a big story on Jani Broome's return this morning. Also a podcast. A lot of fun talking about Jani Broome and some other topics with Auburn basketball. Tomorrow, mailbag. Got basketball and football in there. We got the football roster tracker, the basketball roster tracker. We're going to continue to keep an eye on everything going on in the portal and elsewhere. And, this will be a great time to sign up. It's just $6 a month or $60 a year. Go to auburnobserver.com. We'll email everything out to you. And even though it's the offseason, we're staying busy. And Auburn's giving us plenty of stuff to write about and talk about, so check it out.
For before we let you go, you're making a road trip this weekend.
Yeah, if the weather cooperates, I'm supposed to be going to Talladega on Sunday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is the second time I've been. So Jordan Hill, our buddy, who used to cover Auburn, he's at Georgia. He's a huge NASCAR guy. And last year, before he got married, the day after the Auburn-Georgia game, he took us to Talladega for the first time. I had a blast. He was like, "Hey, I'm going to go to the spring race."
Yeah, so you haven't been to the spring one. It's a little wilder usually.
Yeah. So it's a. We're gonna. Hopefully, the weather will cooperate on Sunday. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's just I'm not a big NASCAR guy. I've never been into the sport, but I'll tell you, going there live and experiencing it in person, it's just, man, it'll blow you away.
It's an unbelievable show, and the sound is the sounds and the sights are pretty amazing.
I went to Dale Jr.'s last Talladega a couple of years ago with a group, and it's a pretty wild scene.
Well, I only went once, but I figured I could never top it. In the same day, we went to Talladega and then went to Pink Floyd at Legion
Field. That's pretty good.
So there you go. Yeah, I can't beat that. I'm not doing anything like that. Just doing straight up Talladega this weekend.
I don't know if I told you. I know we got to let Justin go, but when I was in Greensboro with the team for the WNIT game, mm-hmm. the same night as our game, it was Skynyrd and ZZ Top.
Yeah,
they're doing
the sharp dressed simple man tour.
Yeah. And the tour bus passed me on the road, and I said, no way. And sure enough, yeah, they were playing at the Coliseum that night. But anyways, Ferg, have a great time this weekend, bud.
Absolutely, appreciate it.
Yeah, I got Our thanks, Justin Ferguson.
Auburn Observer, auburnobserver.com. It's and you know what? You got Mother's Day coming up, graduation season, dads and grads.
I've got a big day coming up.
Anniversary, it is
Sunday. Concert that we were going to got canceled.
If you got an Auburn fan in your life who's tough to shop for, an Auburn Observer subscription is a really thoughtful and cool gift. And the time of year where you might need to get a gift for the Auburn grad or the Auburn mom or dad. In your life.
Let's get to our bottom of the hour break. I know we're way behind, but I mean, it was too much good stuff from Justin to cut him off before then. We'll open the phone lines. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Thursday drive.
6-7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 18 minutes away from 6 o'clock here on this Thursday. Our thanks to Justin Ferguson for joining us for a couple of long segments there here this hour, as he's got quite a few things going on. Some great info there, and yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, Auburn, you know, it has been sort of quiet, well, all around the Southeastern Conference and really around the country as far as the numbers going in. There have been some really good players that have entered the transfer portal, but not that many from the SEC. I saw somebody earlier today, I think – the most players that have entered the transfer portal from any SEC school is six thus far. And I was thinking that's probably about what we'd see from Auburn. And we may yet.
Even at the places with the number closer to 10 or, you know, I know Colorado is in that. But
Colorado's had 15.
Yeah, but I don't know how many of them – I don't know how many of them look like they were in the two deep. Like going well, you know what I mean? Like it's
There's one or two,
right? But I mean –
a DB – a couple of guys on the defensive side. But
it sounds like some of it is, you know, there's some.
He's just cleaning house again.
Unhappy with the
fact. Yeah, Deion said, did you watch the spring game? Yeah, I think that was his point. Like, if you didn't see him playing,
Here's the thing, though. It takes more than 45 on the two deep, though. Like, I mean, you need more than that. I mean, you can feel great about your two deep and tell everybody else to go, but you realize later in the season and later in the game, you even need the guys who maybe aren't slated to be. Aren't even slated to be the backups, and so we'll see. Bill. I just don't. You know what? That's one where, it was such a hot start with Deion at Colorado, but they seem like they're going into another season without enough on the line of scrimmage, and I don't know how many seasons in a row you get of that right before it's like, hey, this. I mean, maybe at Colorado they were. You know, they were so down when he got there, mm-hmm. and they were so desperate that they'll let it.
They're going to be expecting more than four wins this year.
Should they?
But, well, I'm saying, we're talking about Auburn basketball expectations. But, I mean, I would think that a lot of people are expecting to see another big step this year. I'm not saying I'm expecting it, but I think that there will be expectations that, oh, now we're going to see in year two another big jump. Usually, well, that's when you see a big jump.
Well, you know what? If your team is not good in year two of a coach, it's really hard to feel that security, that confidence that you're on the right track. I mean, look at Florida, right? Year two under Billy Napier, they did mm-hmm. not take a jump forward like they thought they would, and it's a bit of a, you know, I'd say he's under quite a bit of pressure going into year three, and I would say any year two coach, including Deion Sanders and Hugh Freeze, who underachieves or fails to show that progress on the field in year two, it's not as though it's disqualifying. You still might get a third year, depending on how bad things are. You still might get that third year. But recruiting to that environment is you didn't see, even though Florida had playing time to offer, you didn't necessarily see kids flocking to Florida in the transfer portal to come rescue what looked to be something of a cold product, right? When you seem cold, it takes a lot to heat that back up again. This is a season where you don't want to, like, any heat Colorado or Auburn has right now. You don't want it to go from hot to cold by the end of the year.
No question.
It's tough to crawl yourself out of that.
All right, tell you what we can do. We can
get back. You want to get back on time?
Yeah, we'll get back to the final break. Before we do, though, I wanted to mention something that Ben Taylor let me know about this morning, and then Butch Thompson today during his press conference mentioned this because it hadn't been out there in the public. Former Auburn pitcher Stephen Register, who is back here locally, his wife owns a local business. Still young, got to be early 40s, has been diagnosed with stage 4 liver cancer. So there will be some ways to try to help out with that, but Butch, just sort of mentioned that to the media for those that had not heard about that, and just wanted to mention that. Thoughts and prayers obviously going out to Stephen and his family.
Loved Stephen back in his days as a player, early 2000s, yeah, on the roster, and all the best to the Register family. That's terrible news.
Yeah, we will get to our final break. Still time for you to join in here on the Thursday Drive.
Yeah. Since 1997, River City
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan mentioned baseball. We had a little opportunity with Butch Thompson, Cooper Weiss, Parker Carlson earlier today. They're getting, as a matter of fact, they're on their way over to Starkville, taking on Mississippi State this weekend. And
Bulldog Mania or whatever's going on, right? Spring game Saturday?
Yeah, they've got their spring game, so it will be
big crowds.
It'll be bigger than usual. It'll be overflowing. It's always packed. And Butch saying, yes, just like when we had our A-Day and the crowds were setting records, they expect the same thing over there. So they're going in. I mean, little change up. He did say Tanner Bauman will get a start, although they're going to start Dylan Watts tomorrow. Tanner Bauman will start Saturday. And then Carson Myers expected to go on Sunday. So they've got some other options for guys in case they need to go to the bullpen earlier than they would like. All right, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Andrew is next. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Good. I just had a little question for you guys, and I'll hang up. I'm wondering what your opinion on for the leash of Peyton Thorne. How many games in, assuming he plays about the same as he did last year, completion percentage and everything, how many games in do we see if there is a change? Do you think there will be? Or if we just ride him out for the season and sit Hank and Holden on the sidelines?
Well, first of all, if Peyton Thorne doesn't improve markedly from last year, I don't think you'd expect it to be an extremely long leash.
A-A really didn't see much improvement there. Everybody kind of seemed like they were on the same tier. And going into the Maryland game, we were told Peyton's our guy, we're going to stick with him, roll him out there, not very impressive, plays pretty poorly. And I think Hugh kind of shot himself in the foot because you put Hank Brown out there, and that's kind of the last thing we see of him, is going 7-for-9, 132 yards and a touchdown. And, he dropped a dime in A-Day. He looked pretty good. And so I guess you just got a lot of skirmishing going on between everybody because, we kind of saw Peyton for a year and we were told, we're going to lean on his experience. He's, got the starts and all that. But it's hard for anybody else to get experience if you keep rolling Peyton out there and you don't give anybody else a chance.
All right. Maybe from my viewpoint, my vantage point, I thought Hank threw a pass that Cam Coleman made a tremendous adjustment and catch on. But Hank was 5-for-13 in the 8A game. Peyton was 9-for-13. I thought Peyton looked pretty good. Now he didn't look perfect, But I think your receivers have a lot to do with how the quarterback looks. And I will just say from the time that I had and folks, other folks that I talked to that saw even more of spring practice, there's no question who the top guy is right now. Yeah, that doesn't mean that Peyton will always be, and it's his job, and he can't lose it.
I don't believe that there is a desire to put Peyton on the bench and start Holden or Hank or Walker White in the short term. Now, if Peyton plays like someone who needs to go to the bench, like if he plays his way out of the job, Auburn will adjust accordingly. But I don't think I think the chance to replace Peyton for 2024 was when the transfer portal was open after the season was over, and the fact that Auburn didn't do that, they stuck with Peyton Thorne. You know, it's a bet on Peyton Thorne. If he plays his way out of the job, then you know someone else steps in. That's one thing. But no, I don't feel like there's Peyton needs to impress because they're so high on Hank or Holden or someone like that to take the job from him. I don't get that impression.
No, I don't have that. But I will say, if Auburn struggles offensively and Peyton's not playing well, I think that they would look at some other options. But yeah, I don't think the first incomplete pass that Peyton throws, he needs to be looking over his shoulder. But Auburn's offense does need to just be better, and I think with everybody on the same page, with Hugh Freeze having coaches that are familiar with all the verbiage and everything, and Peyton going through spring ball, the expectation is that there will be a big improvement, and there will need to be for him to keep the job. Appreciate the call, Andrew. We are we're out of time here on the Thursday drive. Our thanks to Justin Ferguson for joining us. We've got some audio we could run tomorrow.
Yeah, Barrett,
if we get a chance. Barrett Salih. That's right. Got to remind me of that.
Yeah, I think
because it's been a while. Barrett's been gone, and then I just completely whiffed last week on that. But, we'll have Barrett Salih on with us. Hopefully you'll join us as well tomorrow. But we're out of time here on the Thursday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.